This is HealthLink on Air, Linda Cohen along with you. An estimated 5.5 million Americans of all ages have Alzheimer's disease, with 5 million of them age 65 and older. And the number of Americans with Alzheimer's disease and other dementias will grow each year as the size and proportion of the United States population age 65 and older continues to increase. By 2025, that number is estimated to reach 7 million. That's a 40% increase. Well, here with more on this challenging disease and what can be done about it is Catherine James. She's the CEO of the Alzheimer's Association of Central New York. Welcome. Thank you so much for coming in, Catherine.
Thank you, Linda, for having me.
So let's begin with a quick review for our listeners. Give me a definition. What is Alzheimer's disease exactly?
Well, Alzheimer's is a type of dementia that causes problems with memory and thinking. And in other types of behaviors. The symptoms usually develop slowly and get worse over time and become severe enough to interfere with day-to-day living tasks. So as the disease progresses, an individual may have difficulty initiating their day-to-day personal care tasks that now they need someone within the family or a professional caregiver to help initiate that. Or as the disease progresses, we know that more direct physical care is needed. So this is a disease that that affects the brain, but because the brain is so closely tied to helping to direct all of the organs, finally, as the disease progresses into the late stages, other organs start to have difficulty in functioning correctly. So the individual may have difficulty swallowing, being able to walk, and finally being no longer being able to swallow and breathe.
But it's not a normal part of aging.
That is correct. The changes that we're talking about with memory, because we get lots of calls, Linda, at our office of people that may be concerned about changes that are happening within their memory. And what we how we describe what the difference is between normal aging and Alzheimer's disease, these are significant changes that are affecting your day-to-day life. So a slip-up of somebody's name or missing an appointment, those are things that can happen for a wide variety of reasons. We're talking about changes that are happening that may affect the person's personality and behavior and their ability to recall short-term and long-term events.
But on average, once a person is diagnosed with Alzheimer's, what's the average general length of time that
We know that it can be anywhere between 5 to 7 years, but it can be as long as 10 to 20 years. And a lot of research now is taking a look at when are those changes in the brain happening? And we believe that those changes are taking place long before we're starting to see those outward symptoms. So a lot of the research now is focused on really backing up the clock even further to when a diagnosis and those symptoms may be looking at, that it could be decades as to some of those very slight changes that are taking place in the brain before we even see those outward symptoms.
Yeah, it would be great if we knew better, because perhaps we would develop some kinds of ways of evaluating, whether it be some kind of markers in the blood or what have you. And we'll get to that in a minute. But as far as the causes, you've alluded to the fact that changes are taking place in the brain. I know that there's no clear-cut, theory at this point, or there are theories, but there's no clear-cut definitive knowledge of exactly what's happening.
Correct.
What's being thought right now?
Well, some of the best science at this point is pointing us to some changes that are taking place, again, early on in the cells of the brain. Many people probably hear the phrase plaques and tangles. So plaques are the microscopic clumps of protein that are occurring, the beta amyloid that is occurring on the outside of the cells. And there seems to be some abnormalities that occur with some of this naturally occurring protein that starts to twist. And so there are problems with it then becoming very abnormal and becoming clumping and so forth on the outside of the cells. And then there's tangles, microscopic tangles that are occurring called tau protein that are occurring on the inside of the cells.
And the idea is that it basically prevents those cells from functioning in their normal way, communicating from one cell to another, so that whatever it is that we don't even understand completely what makes up thought, But the fact is that thought or initiation of action by the brain is getting limited in some way. It's being interfered with or impeded in some way.
That is correct. And the brain has some plasticity to it, so it will find other routes, so to speak, to be able to have those neurons for a period of time. But we do know with the changes and the loss of connections among brain cells that it seems to start deep inside of the middle part of the brain called the hippocampus. Mm-hmm. And that is why individuals, one of the early symptoms we may typically see is problems with short-term memory. That individual that is asking those same questions over and over again, which can frustrate family members and caregivers. It is the hippocampus that helps to code and embed that that event and that memory so that you can recall
memory.
That back out again.
So how, and this is a question I know that, as you said, you might get calls all the time, but how is Alzheimer's different from other dementias? I mean, how do we determine it's Alzheimer's versus just some kind of dementia, or maybe just the process of aging?
Right. Well, and dementia is a very general term. So dementia really refers and describes a set of diseases and conditions that can damage the brain and the brain cells. So there are things such as that can cause dementia, such as nutritional issues, depression, clinical depression left untreated, Parkinson's disease as it advances, vascular causes, so strokes that cause those changes within the brain. Some of those things can be identified and reversed. So there are things such as nutritional and hormonal changes and thyroid issues and so forth that we may need to identify and determine, is that what's causing the changes to occur, and how might we be able to correct that? So, typically, Alzheimer's disease is the most common cause of
dementia. Read somewhere 60 to 80% of the cases are Alzheimer's,
correct.
But there are things, even things that are kind of a little skewed, obscure, like Creutzfeldt-Jakob syndrome, Korsakoff syndrome, Lewy body, mixed dementia, frontotemporal. So there are other types of dementia out there, but as you said, Alzheimer's seems to be the one that is most prevalent or most common.
That is correct. And a patient can have Alzheimer's disease and one of the other dementias as well, too. So it can be a mixed dementia that we can see as well.
So besides the memory loss itself, just go over some of the other changes that we see, whether they be personality or behavioral changes. What do you see?
Sure. Besides the short-term memory loss, problems with judgment and reasoning. So we rely on our brain to be able to process, to help us to put things in a logical sequence. So an individual may have difficulty with planning out their day and executing it. So
even executive function kinds of things.
Exactly, exactly. Being able to pay the bills, being able to think through the process of what it takes to get yourself to where you need to go in the morning. Being able to utilize aspects of your brain for spatial relationships. So an individual may have more problems with walking, mobility. Driving a car is oftentimes some of the early warning signs of unexplained and more frequent, maybe fender benders.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with Alzheimer's Association of Central New York CEO Catherine James. We're talking about Alzheimer's disease and what can be done about it. Getting back to this idea of behavioral changes, how about personality changes? I've been told and I've heard that sometimes people really seem very, very different. I mean, where they may have been affable and friendly and outgoing, they can become very reclusive or very non-communicative.
And it can even be the flip side of that. So you may have someone that had a very amenable personality, and now all of a sudden they are much more irritated and agitated, and it's hard to pinpoint what might be causing that. There's areas of our brain that help us with controlling and modifying and knowing what might be socially appropriate.
So it's inhibition versus disinhibition.
Inhibition sometimes. An individual may say things or do things that may look very inappropriate given the social situation.
So just very briefly, what goes into the diagnosis?
The diagnosis at this point, because we are still trying to understand biomarkers and what might be some changes that are very early on happening within the brain or the blood, we know that we need to be looking at things like blood, work and just make sure that we're identifying and eliminating what might be some other changes that are happening that we can rule out infections, cancer, other things that may be going on. So oftentimes it involves a very thorough medical workup, the family history, patient history, because we do know that there is a family history link. It's not a definitive. There are some rare cases of Alzheimer's disease where there is a genetic marker for that disease. And if the family has that genetic marker, there is more of a likelihood of passing that down. So we're looking at that family history, as well as information from the primary care caregiver, and then looking at oftentimes brain scan, and then some cognitive testing, which based upon the questions and so forth that are asked and the responses, can really pinpoint where some of that damage is occurring based upon where the more difficult responses lie.
So right now, from your perspective, and I know this is a constantly moving target, what treatments seem to be helping? I know there's not a cure for this disease.
That is correct. I mean, you know, Linda, this is the only disease in the top 10 that has no cure. Excuse me, and has no treatment that can slow the progression down to a point where we may be able to stop the progression. Treatment that's available right now helps with the symptoms. So many of your listeners are probably familiar with some of the ads that they've seen around Exelon and Aricept and so forth. That helps with what brain cells are still able to function and keep those connections as strong as possible. But the process of Alzheimer's disease still continues and still damages those, as well as treatments around behavioral changes that may be occurring. So the individual
lifestyle
help as well, too. Absolutely.
So let's get to what tips you would have in your position and with the Central New York Alzheimer's Association in terms of what you can do. You have a program called Healthy Habits. What do you basically recommend for people who have a loved one with Alzheimer's?
Yes, and we have lots of recommendations for both the patient and the caregiver. So from a patient standpoint, we want to make sure that there's an accurate and fully disclosed diagnosis as well, too. Sadly, we hear from too many patients that haven't been disclosed of that diagnosis, and we know that they want to be part of that healthcare planning.
So you want them to be told
if it is possible, because we do know that as the disease progresses, the patient may not be having that full knowledge and understanding. But in the early stages, it is important for that patient to be knowledgeable about that. Knowledge is everything. So we want to make sure that the patient and family are getting knowledge about the disease, about the next steps. We have a whole series of education programs around living with Alzheimer's for both the patient and the caregiver. Support groups every step of the way. And
that's for both the patient and the caregiver.
That's correct. We do have an early stage support group for individuals living with the disease as well, too. And for some individuals, that's the first time they've had an opportunity to meet other individuals living with that diagnosis.
Do you think music can help in the very little time we have left? Music therapy?
Music therapy, pet therapy, art therapy. There is a lot of evidence to show that those are things that really assist with the patient. But we do know that there are some lifestyle supports and so forth that may not necessarily lead to prevention, but can help us lead a heart healthy and a brain healthy
You're talking
lifestyle.
About in advance, before a diagnosis.
Yes, and even during the diagnosis, we know that things such as cognitive activity, keeping the brain active, physical activity. There's a lot of research that's been going on around exercise, and it doesn't have to be high aerobic activity. Start with something you enjoy and do 10 to 15 minutes a day of it. Diet and exercise and nutrition, and finally social engagement of just being connected to other individuals within your community and within your family and your circle of friends.
Well,
very, very important.
Thank you so much for all this really helpful information. And I know the Alzheimer's Association of Central New York offers a tremendous amount of support for our community. Thank you again. My guest has been Catherine James, CEO of the Alzheimer's Association of Central New York. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to HealthLink on air.